we have said, we want to be your friend. We want to be your partner in all of this. Well, if you want to be a partner, then you behave like one.
An eye toward Russia as the U.S. assumes the chairmanship of the Arctic Council. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, April 17th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, introducing otter fur at Fashion Week in New York City.
We keep cultures and traditions alive by having them be able to be relevant within the present moment.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation providing oilfield services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. Alaska Children's Trust, working to prevent child abuse and neglect by encouraging all Alaskans to take small steps that can make a big difference in the lives of Alaska's children. Information at alaskachildrenstrust.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Children's Trust.
The Alaska State Legislature is scheduled to gavel out on Sunday before the stroke of midnight. But many of the issues lawmakers have delved into, the budget, Medicaid expansion, and marijuana regulations, are still unsettled. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez joins us to talk about what the end game for the legislative session looks like. Hello, Alexandra.
Hi, Lori.
So going into the weekend, it looks like we're heading into a showdown between Governor Bill Walker and the legislature. They've been fighting over the state's gas line policy through the session, and now Walker has vetoed a bill sent over by the House Speaker that would limit his power. How will this go over with the legislature?
Not well. For months, they've been clashing over whether the governor should have the ability to explore a second option for a gas line project that the state is already pursuing. There's a pot of money that's worth over $100 million that the governor wants to use to study an alternative pipeline to get North Slope gas to market. And members of legislative leadership see that as a threat to a deal with the oil companies that has already been partially negotiated. House Bill 132 would effectively block the governor from using that money, and Walker has previously said he would veto it and called key leaders un-Alaskan in the process. In response, there have been executive proclamations and gamesmanship over appointment confirmations, and the legislative leaders have shot back and called the governor paranoid in his response. It's been pretty ugly. It looks like there was some progress being made when the governor withdrew a proclamation forcing the legislature to meet and act on his appointments this morning. But with this veto, it seems like we might be past the point of no return. The legislature needs 40 votes to override the veto, and supporters of the bill are going to be trying to corral those votes.
Passing a budget is the legislature's biggest obligation right now. Where do things stand there?
Yesterday, the House Finance Committee removed language from the capital budget that would have authorized the state to spend money from its constitutional budget reserve. That's the state's $10 billion rainy day fund, and a three-quarter vote in both the House and the Senate is required to tap it. In the Senate, the Republican majority has a large enough membership that they're okay. But in the House, the Republican majority is going to need to pull four votes from minority members to get it through. It's no secret that Democrats' big priorities are Medicaid expansion and education funding. But by taking out the language concerning the constitutional budget reserve vote, it kind of shows that a deal hasn't been brokered. And what happens if we don't see that language get through this legislature is, you know, worst case scenario, there could be a government shutdown. Another thing of note is that more than $40 million was added to the capital budget in support of the Kinnick Arm Bridge project. This was a bit of a surprise, given that Governor Bill Walker has said that he is really revisiting a lot of the mega projects the state has embarked on. But the funding really is just federal money that would eventually... But the funding is contingent on the project being built, and since we're not at that point, it's possible that it won't get spent at all.
What about Alaskan activism, Alexandra? Are we seeing a lot of public pressure on the legislature to get specific things done?
Yesterday, there was a rally to encourage Medicaid expansion on the Capitol steps. And then today, we had a totally surreal situation where two protests on very different issues were happening simultaneously. You had a bunch of high school-age students offering public testimony about cuts to education because money for schools was stripped out of the budget and put to a vote before the public could comment on it. And then on the other side of the street, you had anti-abortion protesters displaying some pretty graphic imagery. It was definitely the First Amendment in action. Separately, there was also a group of people who dropped off a petition today calling on the Department of Law to change its position on a ban on same-sex marriage. So this is what's getting activists going, and some of it is resonating in the legislature, but there are definitely other concerns consuming them as well.
Does it look like we may go into extra innings?
The governor has said that getting Medicaid expansion through is a must-have for him, and that he's willing to call legislators back if they don't pass it. So we could see a special session there. Legislators also have the option of just extending the session by a month, because even though a citizens' initiative a few years ago capped the session limit to 90 days, the Constitution still allows them to meet for 121 days. Now, there's a question of logistics tied up in all this. Most legislators have leases that end by May 1st, and a lot have cars ready to ship on the ferry. All that might serve as an incentive to get work done and at least not go too long.
All right. Well, thank you for that update, Alexandra, as we move into what are likely to be the final days.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
That was APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reporting from Juneau. The United States assumes chairmanship of the Arctic Council next week, kicking off a two-year window to assert American priorities in the region. The U.S. and other member nations have committed to making the Arctic a zone of peace. But now some Arctic watchers wonder if the U.S. needs to add an item to its Arctic priority list: get tough with Russia. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
Russia has been flexing its military might in northern skies and waters, and Swedish authorities last year reported a near miss with a Russian spy plane. Nordic ministers this week described Russia as the greatest threat to northern Europe's security. Yet the U.S. says it still wants Russia to be its partner in the Arctic. Heather Conley, an Arctic expert at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, says she's unsure what to make of it.
I am struggling with the concept of partner, yet I'm seeing extraordinarily aggressive actions, missing civilian airliners, a lot of military exercises in the Arctic.
Speaking at a forum in Washington, Conley says she's increasingly concerned the U.S. isn't focusing enough attention on Russia's behavior. Senator Lisa Murkowski at the same forum said she's committed to the Arctic zone of peace concept, but it requires that countries respect each other, and Russia hasn't been living up to the standard.
And it causes me to wonder if they are not taking advantage of the fact that we have said, we want to be your friend, we want to be your partner in all of this. Well, if you want to be a partner, then you behave like one.
The senator says the U.S. government needs to send an equally strong message to Russia to let it know its actions are unacceptable.
And as much as we want to be working together, we want to collaborate on scientific opportunities, we want to collaborate in areas of the environment, let's not say one thing on the one hand and then our actions take us in a different direction. We need to call Russia out when Russia needs to be called out.
Murkowski was the keynote speaker at the Arctic Forum, sponsored by the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Her main message is that the Obama administration should place a higher priority on the well-being of Arctic people rather than giving climate change top billing. Murkowski agrees climate change and how to adapt to it is a valid Arctic issue.
But it cannot be our sole and singular focus, and it cannot be held over or held against the people of the Arctic. It should not be used as an excuse to prevent those who live in the Arctic from developing the resources available to them in order to create a better standard of living.
Murkowski also addressed what other senators have called the irony of the Arctic: that rapid Arctic warming gives access to more petroleum, which, when burned, will bring on more warming. At a hearing last month on Arctic issues, a Democratic senator and a liberal independent asked why Arctic Slope witnesses favored oil development when their communities are the most vulnerable to climate change. Murkowski says the question ignores what resource development has brought to the North Slope, from medicine to search and rescue and home heating.
There is no irony in the people of the Arctic benefiting from the economic opportunities that are available in their region, but there is an irony in deliberately limiting their economic futures while claiming that somehow it's for their own good and somehow in their best interest.
The Arctic Council meeting is next week in Canada. Russia's foreign minister has declined to attend. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, church officials lead a rally to convince lawmakers to expand Medicaid.
And I'm keeping the faith and I'm hopeful, but my love for some of the leaders is waning now and then.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Earn a Master of Public Administration from the University of Alaska Southeast online on your schedule while having the structure of the classroom and the accessibility of e-learning. More at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by UAS.
Though discussion of new revenue hasn't gone far in the legislature this session, today the Senate passed a measure taxing refined fuels. The bill updates how the state saves money designated for oil spill prevention and response. In the past, taxes were collected by the barrel and placed into a fund. Under House Bill 158, though, about 1 cent per gallon of gasoline is charged at the point of sale. Soldotna Republican Peter Michicki says while the 1989 Exxon Valdez disaster casts a long shadow, most of the spills the state pays to clean up are small.
I hope you can support this environmental surcharge. It's less than a penny per gallon, less than a penny per day. Per Alaskan, and the effort is about keeping Alaska clean and spill-free.
Some senators oppose the measure because they say it unfairly collects a tax from customers who many may never spill fuel. Chugiak Republican Bill Stoltz says the bill plays favorites by levying a new tax on consumers, but not the aviation or commercial fishing industries.
I am going to try to exercise a discipline of not creating new revenues and protecting bureaucracies at a time when we're still nowhere near finished, though. I'm not trying to make a hard, fast line in the sand, but it's a line in the sand that I certainly just don't want to rub off when it's convenient.
The bill passed the Senate with a vote of 13-7 and now heads to the governor's desk for signature. Hundreds of Anchorage residents gathered in Cuddy Park last night to rally for Medicaid expansion. The event was organized by AFACT, Anchorage Faith and Action Congregations Together, a coalition of local churches. Organizers hope the rally will make a difference as lawmakers enter the final days of the legislative session. APRN's Annie Fite reports.
The crowd squeezed together on the amphitheater bleachers, holding up signs that read, "Expand Medicaid, save money, save lives, and we are our brother's keepers." Pastor Julia Seymour from Lutheran Church of Hope started things off with a new version of an old song.
For Medicaid expansion, I'm gonna let it shine.
The crowd was diverse, Samoan, Hispanic, Alaska Native, young and old. Some had health insurance, others did not, like Tara Devlin, who spoke at the rally. Devlin graduated from college and then started a preschool last year. When she went to sign up for insurance on healthcare.gov, she found out she earned too little to buy subsidized insurance. In most other states, she would have been able to enroll in Medicaid. Some Republican lawmakers say the state can't afford to add Alaskans to the Medicaid system, even with the federal government paying most of the bill. Devlin thinks they're wrong.
It's an investment, and it's an investment in healthy Alaskans, and it's an investment in young people like me who want to start businesses and be here for the rest of my life and put my kids through the schools here. By not investing in me, it makes people like me want to leave.
Medicaid expansion would give federal health insurance to up to 40,000 low-income, mostly childless adults like Devlin in Alaska. The local chapter of Americans for Prosperity has been making the argument against expansion this session. State Director Jeremy Price is considering organizing his own rally. He questions a recent poll showing even in the most conservative areas of the state, more Alaskans support expansion than oppose it. Price thinks many Alaskans don't understand what expansion means, and because of that, the state should wait.
Let's focus on something that Alaskans agree on. You know, we see reform as something that Alaskans agree on both sides of the argument. Both sides of the expansion, you know, supporters of expansion and opponents of expansion, both agree on reform. So let's focus on that. Let's pass reform first.
After each name, we will respond, may light and truth guide them. Let's practice.
Towards the end of the rally at Cuddy Park, Pastor Julia Seymour led a prayer for every elected official in Juneau.
Representative Mike Chenault.
Senator Anna McKinnon.
Seymour went to Juneau last month and met with several lawmakers to make the case for Medicaid expansion. She says she learned a lot from the trip. She thinks some lawmakers are paying attention to misinformation instead of the truth about Medicaid expansion. But she's willing to be patient.
The Bible tells us that faith, hope, and love go on and do not end. And I'm keeping the faith and I'm hopeful, but my love for some of the leaders is waning now and then.
Seymour thinks her trip to Juneau did make a difference, and she thinks the rally can too.
If it doesn't make a difference, we really have to question whether our leaders are representing the people of Alaska. We vote them in not to hold to their own agendas, but to pay attention to what we lift up as the issues of our community.
If Medicaid expansion doesn't pass this legislative session, Seymour says there will be a lot of grieving by people like her who expect to see it happen. But she won't abandon the fight. She says she can't give up until all Alaskans have some kind of health safety net. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
The repercussions of reduced state funding are hitting home at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, some academic programs are going away.
The University of Alaska Fairbanks is just beginning the process of rolling out the planned program discontinuations and suspensions. UAF spokeswoman Marmion Grimes says the programs are not being publicly named until those directly impacted are notified.
The provost is meeting with programs this week to let them know what their status is.
An April 15th letter from UAF Provost Susan Henricks says the targeted programs represent less than 10% of those offered by UAF and affect about 2% of students. Grimes says programs being cut or suspended were among 46 with low enrollment reviewed over the last year, emphasizing that affected students will not be abandoned.
We're committed to teaching those programs through and allowing those students to get their degrees in a reasonable amount of time.
Grimes says students in affected programs will be individually contacted. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on Condor.com. Condor, born to fly. Alaska Pacific University emphasizes teaching and research that engages the region's social, cultural, environmental, and geopolitical issues. The university's Early Honors Program attracts academically advanced high school students who complete their senior year credits while also earning college credits as full-time APU students. This message sponsored by APU.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Ann Hillman. This week on AK, fur fashion. This spring, Sitka artist Peter Williams took a trip to New York City to show his work during Fashion Week. A designer and marine mammal hunter, Williams makes everything from hats to earrings from sea otter and sealskin. He's been trying to break into the lucrative fashion world for years, and he's got a larger goal in mind, bringing Alaska Native designs to luxury buyers worldwide. As KCAW's Rachel Waldholtz reports, Williams says that one way to save a traditional art form is to create a market for it.
When people walked into the textile lounge in an airy loft space in Manhattan during February's Fashion Week, one of the first things they saw was a display of seal and sea otter earrings, headbands, and cuffs from shaman furs. That's the business name of Sitka artist Peter Williams, and Anthony Flora was modeling one of Williams' seal and otter vests.
I don't think anyone has walked by without touching something. Like, that's one of the funniest things. It's like, I've been asked if I could be touched 20 times.
Williams was in New York as part of an effort to introduce his work, and marine mammals in general, to the upscale fashion industry, which sometimes takes a little explaining, especially in an industry with a famously ambivalent relationship with fur. But Williams has his pitch down.
Alaska natives are exempt from the Marine Mammal Protection Act, so we're allowed to hunt marine mammals for food, clothing, and to make arts and crafts for sale like this.
He's tried a couple different spiels. This one seems to get the key points across. It's legal, it's special, it's Alaskan. Fashion editor John Nubian stopped by Textile on a break from the runway shows uptown, and he was impressed.
The craftsmanship, the quality, and everything. I just came from Lincoln Center today, and there were like two fur shows. You know, Dennis Basso, which is like the biggest American fur designer. And, you know, this is like on par with that. And it's just like...
Williams' signature piece is a man's vest. The top third, or yoke in fashion terms, is harbor seal. Below that is sea otter. The back is wool. Like all his clothes, he sews it himself. The price tag? $1,500. And that's the key issue.
Part of why I do what I do and part of trying to bring seals and sea otters to kind of higher end fashion is to get kind of try to get a living wage for doing arts and crafts.
His prices are a little too high for craft fairs or Etsy, he says. He has pieces in a few shops in Sitka, and he has a website, but he needs a bigger market, one where customers don't blink at paying $1,500 for a vest. And that means finding a way to sell outside Alaska.
Part of it is we keep cultures and traditions alive by having them be able to be relevant within the present moment, and the younger generation needs to be able to make a living in order to continue arts and crafts and traditions.
Williams faces some major hurdles, like, for starters, being a one-man shop based on an island in southeast Alaska, far from any fashion capital, or being pretty much the only person trying to do this. Williams estimates there are a few dozen people in southeast working seriously with sea otter. They sell almost exclusively locally. And then there's the more fundamental issue of trying to explain what he's about to a fashion world that has almost no context.
How do I bottle and explain thousands of years of culture and customs and connection with the land? And that's something that's very challenging to say to someone who like grew up in New Jersey. No offense.
None taken.
Who lives in the city and who might not even know that like Alaska natives are still around, or that there is such a thing as Alaska native.
Williams knows what he'd like to get across. If he had to sum it up in one word, it would be connection. He says his work is all about being connected to a specific place, to nature, to the animals he's hunting, to culture, to heritage. So he has a product that people can't keep their hands off. And he has a story that seems custom made for this era of conscious consumerism. What he needs is a lucky break. And that's why he took the gamble, flew across the country, and put down what is, for him, a serious amount of money for a slot at Textile. Williams' big hope for this trip was to connect with buyers, ideally buyers for small New York City boutiques. Instead, he says he got a lot of good feedback and spoke to a lot of reporters. His dream remains frustratingly elusive. He was, however, being profiled for the British paper The Guardian by a writer he met a few years ago in Sitka. Guardian photographer Tim Knox decided to take Williams and his models out onto the High Line, the downtown park, for a snowy photo shoot.
We might just like run down there and then do something just with you guys. You put the coats on, take the coats off, do set up, do the shoot, put the coats back on, come back, it's done. So we get something really cool looking and really interesting.
Knox, for one, is on board with fur.
Like you said, it's since the first trade, isn't it? One of the oldest trades.
Yeah.
That and prostitution.
Yeah.
Ignore the British humor, but he's right. And Williams is hoping this old trade can become a modern vocation. For AK, with New York audio recorded by Carol Green, I'm Rachel Waldholz.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week, we're hearing from Wayne Constantine, who's Athabascan and lives in a homestead on the Stony River.
There used to be 13 of us. I used to have all my kids moved out, and now they're just me and my mom and with my mom and dad, and not much to do right now. The ice is going out. Can't travel on the ice. There's no snow to go in the tundra. Holy, I love being on the river. Traveling on the river, looking what's coming around the bends. Never know what animals you're going to see on snow machine or by boat. For sure, being on the river is probably be my favorite place. Summer's really nice. Boat's pretty expensive. We got gas in a lot of villages are $8 to $10 a gallon, and boats get 4 miles to the gallon, so kind of expensive to travel by boat. But when you're out in the villages, a lot of people don't have a choice in summertime. Wintertime is definitely nice too. I was driving this year out there, we hardly had any snow, so it was, people were driving four-wheelers instead of snow machines. That was nice. I do a lot of traveling on the river, go a lot of the villages and meet a lot of people, which is, I think, the best thing in the world is meeting people. Because they're interesting. You can always listen to people and just see what kind of things they've been through, see what kind of things they're doing, see what's going on. If I had one Alaska story, I'd probably say raising my kids on the river, watching them have a good time swimming. A lot of times just sitting quietly at night and just outside, just watching the fire, especially by the river. So, pretty peaceful.
Wayne Constantine lives on the Stony River. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. If you want to tell your story, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Rachel Waldholtz, Annie Feit, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Ann Hillman.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, you can find them at alaskapublic.org and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. Alaska Public Media is inviting all Alaskans to join our online, real-time OVEE screening and chat about the film The Homestretch, Friday, April 17th from 12 to 1 p.m. Just log in at alaskapublic.org and click on the Homestretch banner. The men and women of Public Employees Local 71 keep the haul road and thousands more miles of Alaska highways clear of snow and sleet in winter and safe for travel in the summer. 2,500 members strong with 74 workstations across Alaska. Public Employees Local 71, working hard for Alaska, working hard for you. This message is sponsored by Public Employees Local 71.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.